You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. This week on the show, Greg Bannick joins us to talk about Avengers Infinity War. I am so excited.
Steve, stop whatever you are doing and listen to me.
Peter, what are you doing here?
I have come here from the future to tell your listeners that next week we are going to be talking about Deadpool 2 on this show.
That's all well and good, Pete, but we, you know, with some scheduling issues, we haven't been able to get to Infinity War until now. So this week is about that.
Why would you want to talk about the Avengers when you could talk about X-Force and Deadpool? I came all the way from the future to tell you about this, and you're just going to shrug me off?
Look, Pete, we just don't have time. This has to end now.
Wait, Steve, what are you doing? What are you doing with the Infinity Gauntlet? Oh, I don't feel so good.
Damn you, Thanos!
Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Welcome to the podcast. We are so excited you'll join us this week to talk about Avengers Infinity War. Literally the biggest movie of all time. You can make that argument about the scope of the film, the cast, but it's also the first film, or the fastest film to ever reach $1 billion, breaking the record of The Force Awakens. This is a huge movie, and we are so glad to welcome back Greg Bannick. Welcome, Greg.
Hey, thank you, Steve. I'm so glad to be here. This has been a podcast 10 years in the making.
It has. I know you've been making notes that long.
But that long.
You know, Greg, I know you're a Marvel guy. Or at least a comic book guy.
Yeah.
So this literally has been, I think that's an appropriate way to describe this. This literally has been a film 10 years in a making. It's not just a sequel. It feels like an amalgamation of a mega franchise. 18 different movies sort of brought together in this one film. Mm-hmm. I thought that since you're a comic guy, Greg, I'm going to put you to the test.
Okay.
I got some questions here to see how well you've been paying attention before we get into this talk on Infinity War. Are you game?
Yeah, I'm game, Steve, but here's the thing. See, I have, through secret channels, also compiled a couple of questions for you from the movies.
Oh, this is going to get so much worse so fast. All right. That's fine by me. So three on three. Let's do it. Who's going to go first? We never established that. Who do you want to go?
Okay. So you know what? Your show. So how about you ask me the first question?
All right. Home court advantage.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. All right, Greg. So I'm going to go first. Question number one. It has been said that over the last 10 years, Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark is the backbone of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Okay.
How many films has Tony Stark made an appearance in?
Oh, that's a great question. All right, give me a second here.
No time. Go. No, I'm kidding.
Thanks. Okay, so hang on. So obviously Iron Man 1, 2, 3. He appears in a post-credit scene in Hulk, The Incredible Hulk. Not to be confused with the very first one with Eric Bana. Avengers, Age of Ultron, Spider-Man Homecoming, Civil War. Are we including this movie that we're talking about?
Well, it is one of the movies, so I think that's fair.
Okay, so, all right. Hang on. So I want to say 9.
I'm impressed. I figured you'd get it once you nailed that post-credit scene. I thought that would slip by you. 9 movies is correct.
Woo!
Oh, man. All right. Oh, jeez. All right, okay.
On to the races. All right. Well, speaking of very Hulk-like questions, who is the actor that plays General Thunderbolt Ross from Incredible Hulk on?
Oh. I can picture him. I want to say William Hurt.
And as much as it hurts me to say it.
Yeah.
You are correct.
I was so glad they brought him back in Civil War because it's like it was the literally the only time they acknowledged that Incredible Hulk is in the MCU.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, what are you gonna do?
I weep for Edward Norton.
He is actually very, very close friends with Mark Ruffalo. He and Mark Ruffalo are actually very, very good friends. And when they asked Mark Ruffalo to step in, Mark Ruffalo felt really bad because, of course, Edward Norton was that. Edward Norton has since then said that if anyone was going to replace him, he's glad it was Mark Ruffalo.
Really?
Yep.
Huh. I wonder if they hang out with Eric Bana.
That would be very interesting.
I wonder if they just don't return his calls anyway. Okay. All right. That's fair. That's fair. I'm just trying to decide. That was a fair question. I'm just trying to decide how mean I should be on the second one here. Okay. In the Guardians of the Galaxy films.
Okay.
We are introduced to, of course, several members of the Guardians team.
Yes.
Name the parents, both parents, of Star-Lord.
Oh, no. Now we're okay, so hang on. We have to go not by the comics. We have to go by the movies.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Well, no, he has different parentage in the comics. Well, you know what the worst part is? I saw these movies recently. So obviously it's Kurt Russell's character, Ego. So
yeah, that's a gimme. That's a gimme.
Right, but I'm trying to remember his mom's name. That's the thing. I only have half. I can't remember his mom's name.
There was no mom. It's a trick question. No, I'm kidding.
He has an immaculate conception? It's
by his father, apparently. No, it was Meredith Quill.
Meredith Quill.
I know. I'm sure that name was on the tip of your tongue. Yes.
Well,
yes.
I knew it was Quill. I just didn't know it was Meredith. All right. Well done. Okay. All right. Hey, speaking of parentage.
What? Wait, what?
Yeah. Well, we're going to get my question now.
Okay.
Name Loki's actual father.
Oh. Wait. In the films, it's named?
Yeah. I think he only mentioned it once.
Okay. All right. Oh, I got this. Loki's dad is Blue Guy the Iceman.
Yes. Do you know his name?
I'm going to say Brian.
So close. Laffy. Laffy the Ice Giant is his name. Wait. I'm fairly certain when Odin talks about the battle, he says that's the name of the guy he stabs. So there you go.
I'm going to research this. I'm going to make sure that is listed in the films. I can go back and...
Well, you know, and again, if it's not in the films, it's in the comics or, you know, within Norse mythology. Wait, you're not an expert on Norse mythology there, Steve?
Wait, North mythology or Norse mythology?
I meant Norse. Oh. Did I say North? All right.
Okay. Dang it. I thought I was going to one-up you there. Okay. All right. Marvel has been known to have one major flaw throughout most of their films, and it is the villains.
Okay.
There have been a number of forgettable villains.
Sure.
I would like you to name two that have the word "the" in their name.
Two forgettable villains that have the name "the."
Well, their name isn't "the," but the word
"the"
is
like it's in like their
in their name.
Oh wow, two forgettable villains. But he's not the Abomination; he's just Abomination, so that doesn't count. Thinking of all the movies. Oh because he's just Red Skull. He's not the Red Skull.
I also would have expected. I also would have accepted Red the Skull.
Red the Skull? The Red Skull. They always refer to him later on as the Red Skull. I think you... no. See, I just want to put the in front of all the villains' names, so I think you've just got me on this one.
The Ultron and...
Well, I was thinking, like, the Vulture, right?
Yeah, I guess I would have accepted that. The two that I would think of were Malekith the Accursed.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Thor Dark World.
Or Ronan the Accuser.
Oh, I should have remembered Ronan. Okay, yeah.
Or Zemo the Boring.
He's Baron Zemo. His title is not The Boring. He's Baron Zemo, who gets, in the comics, very stupidly, because it was in the 40s, gets a purple mask stuck to his face by glue, because that's how Captain America tricks him, and then just never uses, you know, glue remover, just keeps the mask on.
It's who he is, man. It's who he is.
I guess so.
All right. Okay. There it is. So it's still only 1-0. This is so shameful.
So if you get this, Steve.
This could be it. This is my moment. This is my moment, Greg.
This is your moment. Okay. So I'm going to bring you all the way back to the very first one of the MCU here. We're going Captain America First Avenger.
Oh, you're thinking timeline, because that's not the first film in the MCU.
Okay, well, sorry, timeline.
All right, okay.
Not the first theatrical release, you're right.
Yeah.
But, so, Captain America, of course, in the 1940s, has a team of, they're actually called the Howling Commandos, not including Cap himself or Peggy Carter. How many commandos are there in the film?
Ooh, that's a good question. Not including Cap or Peggy.
Right. How many commandos are in Cap's squad?
Well, there's Bucky.
Wow. But yes, that's one.
He's one of them. There's Dum Dum Donaldson.
Dugan.
I can't think of the names of the other guys. I want to say there's two more. I want to say there's four.
Wow. Well, four's close, but you needed six.
Six? Including?
There are six altogether. Bucky, who you named. Dum Dum, who you also named. The other ones, Jim Morita. Remember, they call, you know, they tease him, and then he says, I'm from Brooklyn. Remember? James Montgomery Fallsworth, Junior Juniper, and Jacques Dernier, along with Happy Sam Sawyer.
Wow. So
I think now again those are comics, but again I'm looking at a still from the movie, and it's Dum Dum and Bucky, and then four more. So it's six.
Well, I think we've established that we're both pathetic at Marvel trivia. Arnaldo is furious with us right now. But okay, all right. So maybe 18 movies is a bit. A bit much for us to swallow, Greg. Maybe we should focus on one. Just a reminder to you at home, as we're about to talk about Avengers Infinity War, this will be full of spoilers as we talk about characters, plot points, and that happen within the film. So just so you're aware that that is the case. Avengers Infinity War is almost the culmination of the MCU. It feels like it's the end, but there's still three more movies before this whole chapter has sort of been wrapped up and they do something new coming next year. But it tells really the story of Thanos, the ominous villain who has appeared in several Marvel movies but never quite had his day, on his quest for the Infinity Stones. Assembling every Avenger from the entire stories thus far have been brought together to try and stop him. Greg, what did you think of Infinity War?
I was super excited about Infinity War. Obviously, you know, this is the 18th movie leading up to this. There are huge expectations about what we're going to have. And, of course, with huge expectations, you hope that the movie matches it. For myself personally, I have to say I was very, very, very pleasantly surprised. I felt it met my expectations. I felt that the characters involved, for the most part, they did a great job of combining all these major characters together. We're able to piece together a very coherent movie, which, you know, over the course of comics has so many tie-ins and everything else, to try to fit it all together into one film, I thought they did a fantastic job.
Yeah, I got to give them credit. That was one of the things I felt they did really, really well, is that they somehow managed to draw from most of the different franchises and find balance. I mean, this is a film that has something like 50 characters from various franchises, and they interweave them in a way that even though some of them aren't on for very long, everybody seems to have somewhat of a moment, which is really impressive. I mean, they've come a long way since the first Avengers film.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And, you know, some of the moments, I'm sure every person would look at one particular moment and go, oh, I wish this particular thing was a little longer. But, you know, you're trying to fit so many characters in, even if it is a short scene or just a quick moment and you go, boy, I really wish it was longer or that felt rushed. You also need to fit it in the span of one movie. So, you know, unless they do a 10-hour director's cut, I think we will always be able to pick apart or say our favorite hero didn't get enough screen time. But overall, I thought it was well-balanced that way.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's one thing that I didn't think they'd be able to pull off, but I have to admit that's the case. It is the biggest movie I think I've ever seen, and I'm not talking about, like, it's the most popular movie I've ever seen. But the sheer scope of a movie like this, I don't think can ever be matched. Just from the star power to the fact that they're fighting on different sides of the universe simultaneously with the same guy, it really is huge. And that's pretty impressive. I give that to their credit. Now, I have to admit, it's taken me a long time to warm up to it, and it's not because of the ending. My main fear when I saw it was that it was going to be 3 hours of punching and quips. That's just what I thought we were going to get.
You don't read comics, do you,
Steve? I don't, I confess. Arnaldo, again, right now is furious with me because...
Wherever he may be.
Because, you know what, all these storylines that you get excited about from the comics, they just have no frame of reference for me. So what do you mean?
So again, you have to understand, obviously, in doing a movie of this scope as well, Marvel had to pick and choose. So, like, certain characters that are pretty prominent in the comics that this is based off of are present, and then some other major players are not even included. And so for me as well, it was kind of interesting to see, okay, how are they going to navigate trying to explain this? Because, again, as well, if they were really going to copy the comic, then really we've known the answers to these questions for 27 years. So with that in mind, you've got to make enough differences to still make it interesting for those of us that would know the comics or could even just Google it, but at the same time still being respectful of the source material. So, like, how do you kind of navigate that sort of field is a difficult thing to do. Now, one of the criticisms I have of the film was I felt that despite what Doctor Strange may have thought, it looked like there were several times they could have prematurely ended the movie and just due to ridiculous decisions decided not to.
Ridiculous decisions by who?
So, perfect example. Spoiler alert, I know you said it, but I'm going to say it again. So, obviously, when we see that they're trying to rip off the gauntlet as Mantis has got him controlled, and Spider-Man and Iron Man are trying to rip it off, and Star-Lord finds out what happens with Gamora, the man is holding, you know, a gun and decides to punch Thanos with it. So it's like, there were so many other things you could have done. You could have taken the gauntlet off first and then enacted justice. You could have, I don't know, used the gun, which again would not have been very appropriate or Marvel-y, I understand, but it was an option. That sort of thing is one of those moments where I was just like, they could have ended it early, you know, and sort of kind of dealt with that. Or even if, you know, for example, if Gamora, instead of, you know, running to Thanos, ran away from Thanos completely, or, you know, had decided that instead of getting really close to Thanos, and then when they find out, oh, he's got the, you know, reality gem, that, hey, maybe now's not a good time for me to reveal myself, again, might have led to a different decision. Right. Or, as Thanos himself says, if Thor's aim had been just a little better. And, I mean, I know Thanos said you should have aimed for the head, but, you know, Thor's now wielding an axe, and an axe is good at chopping things off, like, I don't know, his arm. Yeah. Because if he doesn't have the gauntlet, he can't control it.
Yeah, it's fair. It's fair. It doesn't show the vast intelligence of many of the Marvel Universe characters in this particular film.
No, but again, it shows a bit of mercy, right? A hero is not supposed to kill.
No, it's true. He could have just cut his arm off.
Again, something that I think, you know, the great and powerful House of Mouse probably told them they shouldn't be able to depict in a movie of this scope.
The scope is something that to me is just remarkable on a film like this. It truly is. And you're right. I mean, this was part one of two. Or was it? Did you consider this a standalone? Because there's quite a discussion about this. I mean, the Russo brothers have said that this is a standalone film. It was announced originally as part one of two, and it seems to be part one of two. But at the same time, that may affect the viewing of a film, or does that affect it for you?
I think you cannot look at this without being without it being a part one of two. It's like saying that Star Wars ends at Empire Strikes Back. It's, you know, all of these other kinds of movie trilogies. It's like saying, and boy, I really wish this had actually been true, there was only one Matrix movie. The one Matrix movie actually makes sense. It was designed to be one, and then they made it. But this one in particular is designed to be a part two. Superheroes are not supposed to end up losing. It's just 101. It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be good looking. Now, but what I think the directors are trying to say in that is, if they, the next movie, if it's not them, or if they need to make different decisions, I think they made this movie understanding that the next one may have a different feel, may have a different tone, may come off with a different primary emotion than what this film had. And in that sense, you could view it as a standalone. But as everyone in my theater kind of gasped when we all kind of look like, that's it?
Yeah.
And left going really upset / darn you, Marvel, you're going to get my money next year.
Yeah, they already had it. I think they've already reached into your wallet and taken it. But to me, that affected my viewing of the film just in a massive way. I've heard the comparison to Empire Strikes Back. It's not Empire Strikes Back. Although Empire Strikes Back is clearly the first film of two, when the cliffhanger at the end of Empire Strikes Back clearly changes everything in the rest of the film to come. Because the acknowledgement that Vader is Luke's father can't be undone. And I admit, I hear stories of people in tears. We just had a great episode with our teens that have been doing all these Marvel movies, and some of them said they cried twice in the film. And I sat there as these guys, these heroes that I've watched for years, vaporize, and all I could think of is everyone who died is part of a franchise. It meant nothing. And so it didn't bother me at all. I admit it didn't bother me at all.
I disagree with only one thing, because I think, for example, Captain America, like, even if everything gets undone, having, say, the choices Captain America made, but more in particular, I look at Iron Man. Iron Man held his mentee, the one he wants to be better than himself, Spider-Man, and watched him die. And when we consider the fact of after the first Avengers film and going into Iron Man 3 and then Age of Ultron, and basically Iron Man dealing with the post-traumatic stress of, you know, I almost died, I'm having these visions of everybody else dying and me being alive, to have that come true, even if everybody comes back, I don't think Tony is ready to deal with what has happened and what is the cost, because, you know, it's really easy to be a hero when everybody who's good makes it. It's really hard to be a hero when you understand sacrifice has to happen.
I guess that's true. That is true. And you know, it's interesting that the ones who survive in the film are basically the original ones, with a few exceptions. It's really the big five, if you will, that we know are going to run the show in the next one, whatever it's called. You know, so I guess there will be some change, but, you know, with the deaths of most of these characters, again, you know, Spider-Man, they've announced the sequel to Homecoming. Guardians, they've announced Volume 3. Black Panther made $800 billion at the box office, and so we know that Black Panther 2 is coming, and these are the main ones they took away from you. You know, I found as I came out of the film, I struggled with the part of not, oh no, they died. My question was, okay, how many of these are going to stick? And that to me was sad. I believe the ones like Loki and Heimdall, I think those ones are going to stick. Gamora is the only question mark for me.
Well, I think you've got one other question, which is not maybe Loki doesn't make it, but you got to figure pretty someone else on Thor's ship has to, because otherwise he's the last of his race. Because at the end of it all, it looked like on that ship, pretty much all of Asgard was gone.
Yeah, I got the sense that that's what they were going for, though. Again, it's stripping him of everything he had. He's lost his home. He's lost his people now. You know, that to me made sense. I don't imagine that the people of Asgard were faking it.
But then again, as we understand about Thanos doesn't necessarily kill everybody. So, I mean, what's going to be next is up in the air. But, Steve, you know, even just as you're kind of mentioning this, as someone who doesn't know the comics and doesn't necessarily know what's coming, then how, you know, you've got these movies, and I mean, maybe they could play off of, you know, oh, this happens in the in-between, right? Like, we know, right, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 happens very, very, you know, timeline-wise, happens very, very early after Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1. And so it's like, did you get the feeling from any of this at all that even, you know, some of the relationships maybe would be long-lasting?
What do you mean with the characters?
Yeah, so for example, you know, Bucky's been to Wakanda, and he's been there for a long time. And so even if everyone comes back, do you think they're going to do something? What about the whole Bruce Banner Black Widow, which other than about a 3-second, you know, kind of scene, we never see anything. Do you think those kinds of elements or those threads will be carried forward?
I hope they do. In some of them, in some cases, like the Banner Black Widow one, I really loved that relationship in Ultron. I thought it was so fascinating to watch. Now I'm getting the sense that it's more of a relationship between Bruce and the Hulk than it is between him and anyone else. Because, of course, now the Hulk won't come out and play because he got the crap kicked out of him by Thanos. But, I mean, some of those threads I was really looking forward to exploring. The Gamora storyline, I don't know whether that is going to follow through, although I'm hearing now, actually Daniel mentioned it in our podcast, but then now the rumors are going is that her soul is very much alive in the Soul Stone. So again, another death that may or may not stick moving forward. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. I will say this, though, Greg. I will say this. What made the movie work for me, and this is the one thing I was dying for. It was the same thing I was kind of worried about with Civil War. My fear was that it was just going to be punching and quips. Thankfully, we had a character that had a real exploration of who they were and a real character arc and character development, and that was Thanos. I didn't see that coming, that Thanos, to me, would be the most interesting character on screen. All the other guys sort of got their moment. Sometimes it felt like a greatest hits to me, you know. They all sort of got to do their thing that they had done, or something that had happened that was notable from one of their franchises, whether it's M'Baku barking or even Rocket getting spun around in circles was sort of reminiscent of the jumps from Guardians 2. All these little things, and of course the best cameo in the film is the Red Skull.
Absolutely. Especially so after we were so hoping he would show up in Winter Soldier, and then we were left with nothing. And it's like, well, when's he going to show up? It was great to finally see him appear.
I thought he'd just been beamed to Edward Norton's island. He's not coming back. So
Steve, he went to Rivendell. Do you not know?
Oh, sorry. My mistake. I'm not sure which is worse. But anyway, Thanos was a genuinely fleshed out villain. Like, I didn't see that coming. Again, not familiar with the comics. But what did you think about the portrayal of Thanos in this film?
As someone who has read the comics and has an understanding of who Thanos is, I really appreciated that they fleshed him out a bit more. I mean, in the comics, he is very much one of the biggest of the bads in the entire Marvel Universe. And part of what made that work for a long period of time was not knowing a lot about him. Now, as comics have gone on, we've come to learn a bit more, but of course, different authors have different takes. So to really, other than a couple of quick cameos, to understand, okay, how was Thanos going to do this and what was his motivation going to be, I was really, really pleased with how they did it. Because his motivation in this movie is similar but different than what's in the comic. But again, it made him seem more real. And his decisions and the things he did seemed more horrific to me, because in some cases I could see someone doing this in reality. Whereas in the comic, they become so big and cosmic and impossible, there's no way a real person could ever do this. But, and again, I'm not trying to say that I think the Infinity Stones are real, but some of the motivations behind Thanos, sadly, if someone was messed up enough or had a terrible experience, I could understand them having a mindset that Thanos has.
No, but you make a good point. What I appreciated about him is that he was clearly the Mad Titan on his quest for power, but he was more than a wrecking ball. This relationship with Gamora gave him an added depth and horror than just a big purple guy who decided to blow up a bunch of things. I really appreciated the fact that there was genuine emotion and feeling. And what made it so much worse is that because it was genuine, and he still chose to give that up. You know, when he taught, and his decisions to destroy half the population, even that is just sort of like, hey, look, I'm going to do this thing, because he thought he was doing the right thing, or did he? It's still unclear to me whether he thought he was doing the right thing or whether it was just something that he felt was the best option and it was an easy decision to make.
I think he makes it clear it's not an easy decision to make, because he himself says in the film, I'm the only one with the will to actually do it.
That's
like
true.
His argument, I think, in saying that was saying that, you know, other people may have reached the same conclusion, but they lacked either whether you want to call it courage or whatever, he called it will, to do it. But my question to you, Steve, is at the end of the movie, the last scene we see of Thanos, what emotion do you think he's conveying there?
The last shot where he's sitting
there? Last shot where he's watching the sun go down and he's sitting there. What emotion? Because, I mean, essentially he accomplished what he wanted to do.
I actually, that shot was actually my favorite one in the movie. And I got this sense of peace in him that I hadn't sensed throughout the rest of the film, because there was such a turmoil within his character. But, you know, I like that you use the term will. And he finally achieved his end goal. And his end goal was not destruction. It was almost like he was looking for it to be quiet. Like, I just got the sense that he was this guy and he just went, ah, finally. You know, that's how I was feeling. What about you?
Yeah. I honestly felt that was the same thing. I mean, he has ultimate power in the whole universe. He's got the whole gauntlet. He's got all the stones. He does what he wants. And then the question often we want to think of is then, okay, if you have absolutely everything and you've done everything you want, what do you do next?
Yeah.
And, you know, often I was thinking, you know, if he's Thanos, he's the Mad Titan, he's crazy, he's all of this. You know, what do you do afterwards? What is left to conquer? And he instead goes, I'm done. I've done everything I want to do. Like Alexander the Great wept that there were no more worlds left to conquer and no more lands left to go to. Thanos isn't upset. He's just at peace.
Yeah, there's genuine satisfaction, which actually I loved. It wasn't that I loved that he destroyed half the universe, obviously, but it was just like his character was driven to achieve a goal. And it wasn't like Red Skull back in First Avenger, where it's like, how much power can I accrue and how many worlds can I conquer and continuous. It almost wasn't how much can he consume. He just went out and sat out. He just went out to do one job. And I had to respect him for that. I mean, other than Spider-Man, who clearly seemed to like hurt when he vaporized, it was like, all these guys are disappearing. I'm like, the dude's just trying to complete one thing, and he did it. It was really interesting.
And I think it makes him a better villain.
I agree.
Because again, you know, he's done what he wants. And again, to him, in his own mindset, he's not the villain.
Yeah. Well, that was interesting, too. You know, Thanos has this idea that he's being merciful. I was wondering how you felt about that definition of mercy.
Again, he doesn't really define it well, but, you know, if you think about his goal on a planet is, he says, basically, if I wipe out half the population, the other half can live extraordinarily well. And there are a couple of flaws with calling that mercy, because one, you could say, if mercy truly is defined as compassion, and arguably even forgiveness, I mean, you could somewhat say it's like, well, with the half that lived, you could say he's being merciful in the fact he's not killing them all. And it's like, well, sure, but he's still killing half. But on the other hand, you've got to ask yourself, isn't this a perpetual problem? Because, of course, if the other half lives and has a lot, then eventually isn't he going to have to do it again and again and again as more and more people begin to grow or consume more things? And really, I struggle with him calling it mercy simply because it's like, it's really not showing mercy to anyone, because either you die or you're left in a horrific cycle where, you know, half of your loved ones and half of everyone you know will be killed. And then you never know if he'll ever come back again, because if things get better, it's only going to bring him back faster.
Yeah, you know what I thought was interesting is that the deaths were random. You know, when he describes it, he says there was no rhyme or reason to how he chose who would be exterminated. So it wasn't as though in order for the rich to succeed, he exterminated the poor, or vice versa. It's the question is, who is it better for? Is it he's decided that it's a percentage and not a person? You know, literally we're going to wipe out half the planet so that the other half will have enough resources. And we're going to take, I think, you know, there's that scene where he first meets Gamora and he's like, I'm going to take the left side. You know, let's slaughter them.
Yeah.
Who's there? They just happen to be, you know, at that.
On the left.
On the left right now. Let's just wipe them out. I thought it was pretty interesting. Yeah, and, you know, one of the things, too, that in our Infinity Warm-Up podcast on this episode, one of the things that the kids noticed is how many of his actions referenced back to biblical God-like actions or biblical actions of God. And it was really interesting coming from them because one of the things they talked about was Noah exterminating the human race. I hadn't made that comparison. The sacrifice of a child, of his child. We mentioned, you know, good old rapture theology at the end, basically giving you a clip from Left Behind in that post-credit sequence where the helicopter goes down. You're like, oh, the pilot's gone. So it's like...
I hear you, and I think you can clearly make some of those analogies. But for me personally, part of the problem I have with it is, and as you just said, Steve, you know, in the Bible, to me, when I think about the Bible, I think of it of God making it very clear and trying everything he can to tell us not to sin, because the consequences of sin are, of course, death. And so whether it's through, you know, when we think of the judgment upon Noah, he's judging the earth and says it's so sinful, it's done. And when some of these things are happening and these whole places get wiped out, it's, well, their sin has become complete. And again, because we don't have the whole story from, you know, that perspective, we of course are left making questions of, well, how many people were there? How many sins? How long was this going on? But by Thanos just saying, no, I'm just going to kill half and I don't care who lives or who dies. I don't care if, you know, the greatest philanthropist in the world lives or dies, and then the greatest murderer lives or dies. You've got to wonder, was there any morality to it? Or, you know, for Thanos, I would say his highest morality is a number. Is just survival and making sure that number never hits zero the way his planet became. And I thought it was great that, you know, the planet he's from is Titan, because it makes it very clear when he's the Mad Titan. They're talking about the fact of, you know, what would it be like to be the only one of your species left alive? Because, again, even Gamora being his quote-unquote daughter, or Nebula being his quote-unquote daughter, we understand, well, yeah, they're his kids, but they're his adopted kids. They're not his biological kids. And so, again, is he using these children as a replacement for something he's lost?
It could be. But he seems himself to be benevolent. He has made those comments, you know, throughout the film. He does talk, or he does speak, as though he's doing everybody a favor by doing these things. You know, it's interesting, and I agree with you, too. I mean, they say in the first act, you will never be a god. Thor makes that, I think it was Thor. It might have been Loki or Heimdall. I believe it was Thor. It could have been Loki.
No, it was Loki.
It was Loki.
He goes, you will never be. But I thought he says, you can never kill a god.
No, he says, you will never be one.
Oh, you will never be a god. Yeah, that's right. No, that is what he says. But it is Loki who says it.
Okay. Yeah, see, they differentiate it very quickly. It's interesting because having gone through all the movies again, I've noticed that Phase 3, it's all about issues with your mentor and issues with God. It's really fascinating to look at. You can look at different portrayals along the way, but you look at the relationship Doctor Strange has with the, not the Magnificent One, the Ancient One.
Ancient One.
With the Ancient One. You've got Star-Lord meeting Ego, the living planet, who is basically the arrogant God. you know, trying to plant something until it works to glorify himself. You've got Iron Man and Spider-Man, which it isn't really God issues at all, but certainly the father-son dynamic. Thor has issues with the death of his father. And then you've got this character of Thanos, who is a father character and an angry, wrathful god, image of God.
Yeah.
And I see, to me, you know, going back, you said you talked about the difference. I think one of the real differences the value of human life, because to Thanos, he thinks he's put the value in some human life is the value in all human life. Some are expendable because the others will live better, but he's lost the value in the sum of the others.
Yeah, I think the best person of morality, I think of across all the movies that we have, as depicted in the movies, happens to be Captain America, right? Mm. You know, in Avengers, it always struck me as a really great line that we just throw away where, you know, Thor grabs Loki out of the Quinjet, Iron Man blasts off, and then Cap's about to jump out, and Black Widow says, "Don't you know that he's a god?" And Cap goes, "There's only one god, ma'am, and I don't think he dresses like that," and jumps out. And then by this movie, we have, you know, by the end of Civil War, we have this idea of he disagrees with Tony's, but leaves it up as, if you ever need me, despite our differences, I'll still show up. Mm. And then in this movie, this idea of saying, you know, well, will you sacrifice one person to save everybody else? Meaning, will you sacrifice Vision so that everyone else could potentially live and on Earth? And his decision basically is, I value life so much, I will lay down my own, but I will never ask someone else to do it, which is very much the polar opposite of Thanos, who maybe his act of mercy is saying, I will take that sin and that burden of being the, you know, the world's worst genocide creator ever off everybody else's shoulders by doing it myself.
Yeah. You know, along that line, one of the questions that you had mentioned earlier is the idea of willing to live with less if it meant that others could have more. I was wondering what you meant by that and how it informs your viewing of the film.
Absolutely. So that whole idea, you know, when we look at what Thanos does is, you know, even afterwards when Gamora is challenging him and all of this, he says, have you ever looked back upon your planet? They live with full bellies and all of this in their homes and all of this stuff. And for Thanos, he seemed to have made it an equation that basically makes it seem like the only way that everyone will have enough is if there's only half as many people. And then when I look at, like, Captain America and some of these others and the sacrifices and things they're willing to do, they're going to go on the run. They're going to be worldwide criminals because they want to be able to respond to each and every crisis without government intervention telling them yes or no. Mm. You have this idea of, you know, are we willing to live with less so that other people can have enough to survive, you know, and especially as people who live in Canada and all of this stuff, I think that's a very important question we need to ask ourselves. And something I really thought that the movie is trying to share a message with the rest of the world, because with the worldwide message, and again, I think that started also in Black Panther, you have the world's, you know, most advanced society, but they're so insular. And you could, you know, talk all about that, but this isn't the Black Panther podcast. But I think for this movie, Thanos makes the decision of, you know, will we who have a lot ever cease to want more? Or are we willing to give up so that other people can have more? And Thanos' answer in the way he acts is, clearly we will never be unselfish enough or selfless enough to sacrifice ourselves. We're always going to want more. And so the only way for everyone to have more is for there to be less people so that there's enough to, I guess he would say, go around. But it doesn't solve the problem of selfishness, of greed, of just, you know, lusting after the fact of having more than someone else. So I think in this movie, the character of Thanos and the conclusion he makes is in some ways something of a critique of our culture and saying, you know, we always want the latest device. We always want a faster car, a bigger house, more money, more this, more this. And do we understand what it costs to the rest of the world?
Hmm. I really like that comparison you made with Black Panther. I didn't clue into that, but you're absolutely right, because that was one of the key moral questions. It was the key moral question of Black Panther was, is protecting Wakanda more important than helping the rest of society? But, yeah, that's an interesting comparison, because Thanos somehow just goes the other way and actually takes from society in order to better a few. Again, it's a strange way to look at the value of human life. It really is. It's like, hey, I can give a better life to these few people if everybody else is just not here. And it shows a complete disregard of the respect of the life of others. And, you know, you look at Black Panther, and they've kind of gone, that's how they start. You know, that's the whole issue with Killmonger, is that you guys have held back. You have actually prevented our success by hoarding it for yourself. And in the end, they decide that they're going to move on from that. They're going to make a different decision. You see the good of humanity in that moment, that's really interesting that you compared those two.
And I think it's also interesting that, you know, Black Panther being the last movie before this one shows up, and then where is the big battle happen? Who's going to face the most damage prior to Thanos's, you know, big attack? It's some of the major cities like New York, but it's also the one nation that was very insular, Wakanda, right? You know, how are we going to prevent them from going around the shield? We're going to drop the shield and we're going to meet them head on. And the idea of, okay, Wakanda, now it's your turn to be as battle damaged as New York. Although really, as has always been true for movies, New York is once again destroyed, because we see at the beginning of the film of all of this. And, you know, is that another critique of New Yorkers just being tougher than whatever adversity they have? Who knows? But to me, one of the other things that I find interesting is, you know, you said he saves a few. Well, let's think about some of the few he saves. The Black Order. We're talking about his, you know, his compatriots, the kind of the messengers, the harbingers that he has. And these people, you know, that first guy that we meet with the telekinetic powers, he seems very eloquent at first. But beyond being eloquent, you're just terrified of him. Mm-hmm. And all of the other members that he has, you don't look upon these people as someone who's, you know, found peace. You look upon these people as someone who's here to really force you into making a decision.
Yeah, it's true. I'm just trying to process that, yeah.
Because, I mean, you look at Gamora, and it's kind of interesting as well, because, you know, Nebula and Gamora are they call themselves sisters, and you see the differences between them, but you kind of get this idea, you know, Thanos' whole plan was to leave everything to Gamora for her to continue what he had begun. And you look at the rest of the Black Order, you look at the lady with the blades, that you look at the guy with the telekinetic powers, the big, you know, Hulk-like guy that is on his squad, and all of this other stuff. And it's like, you look at them like it's his Avengers, and his Avengers don't look like Avengers. They look like a group of bloodthirsty murderers.
It's true, actually. The Black Order were fascinating. I really think that, but I just sort of got the, see, I didn't read too much into it other than they were just his goons. Like, there wasn't much character there other than the fact that they were just big hulking people. But certainly, I wasn't even sure that he was going to leave anything to them. Like, they were almost expendable to him. Although he does say that many, many lives had to be sacrificed today at one point.
Yeah.
Or too much,
you know,
blood.
Or they said, you know, you're going to shed a lot of blood, and she says, well, we've got blood to share, like to shed.
Right.
And then those creatures come out, which again makes me wonder if that's what Thanos wants to keep alive. Do you really want to be on the side that lives? Because what were those creatures? Were those creatures always that kind of creature? Did he turn them into those creatures? Who knows? I mean, if you think about it, Thanos had all the power in the universe. He's got all the stones. He's got the Infinity Gauntlet, and he could do one thing. And again, his choice was a horrendous one.
Yes.
But my thought is, you know, why do you think he didn't just bring back Titan? He has the Reality Stone. We saw him in a brief moment. Why do you think he decided to think of the future as opposed to the past? Why didn't he just bring everyone back as opposed to say, no, I'm going to wipe out so that the future could go on? Because he has the Time Stone. Does time, you know, matter at that point? So I guess really my question to you is, well, you know, why do you think Thanos made the decision he did if he is essentially almost omnipotent, if he isn't? Why? What do you think his logic was?
Well, that's a fascinating question. I hadn't considered that, but you're absolutely right. He could have brought that back at any time. I get the sense that it's simply because he felt he made the right decision. When he talks about what happened at Titan, I didn't get the sense of much regret. I got the sense that he didn't really like it, but I didn't get the sense that it was something he felt that needed to be undone. The only thing he seemed to regret was that Titan was gone. But when he speaks of his decision, he speaks of it in such a way that it was the right call. So it's interesting that he doesn't seek for healing. He looks at healing through destruction. And it's almost the type of damage that you would suggest. It's like, I'm going to do this so you guys will leave me alone. You know, well, let's wipe out half and you guys can figure it out on yourself. He talks about himself as a good king, if you will.
Forced to make the hard calls.
Forced to make the hard decisions,
yeah.
Yeah, that would be my impression. Because you're right, he could simply just turn his hand and, you know, the Time Stone kicks in and fix it. But he's not interested in fixing it that way. I think he sees the problem as just resources. You know, let's just exterminate. Because he's not going to fix those problems. He's not interested in that. Overpopulation is too much. So let's just wipe out. You know, it's interesting too, going back to this godlike analogy. It's amazing to think about who tells the story. You know, when you look at a character like Thanos and you see his whacked out motivations and whatnot, you can look at the events, you know, I was thinking back to what the kids were saying. You can look at the events and say, well, they're similar because of X. But really the motivations and the heart behind it reshape the entire thing. You know, Thanos' view of love and mercy is death. It begins with death. But when you look at the God of Scripture, sometimes there is death, but you get the sense that it wounds him every time. Like, it's not something that he wills to have. But there are moments where those things happen. You know, Noah is a terrifying passage to read. It's terrifying.
Absolutely.
But we see, when we read the scripture, we see it from his vision. We see his story. And it affects the way we understand the events.
No, but I think you brought up an excellent point. And to me, it talks about the very difference between, you know, you said, well, he doesn't want to go back. He doesn't, like, it feels like it's finished. It's complete. It doesn't need to be undone. And then, you know, for me, when I think about for myself and when I look at the Bible and I think about what Jesus has done for us on that cross, you know, his last words being it is finished, and it is such a juxtaposition between the two, because for Christ it is, I'm going to carry the sins of the world and die to set you all free, even though you all hate me. And in some ways, Thanos is going, even though you all hate me, I'm actually going to save you. But the difference being is Jesus gives up himself. Thanos gives up stuff, but he's still alive in the end. You know, and he's willing to give up others, but what is he willing to give up? He's like, well, he loses relationships and all of this. Well, sure, Christ gives up that and more.
Yeah.
And you know, all of this other stuff. And of course, the story doesn't end at the cross. It's then this, you know, the resurrection. It's the fact that life is more powerful than death. And what I think I find very interesting in this movie, and I think the reason why so many of us are upset about how that movie ends, is the fact that I think innately within us, we don't like hearing, is that all there is to life? Is just, you know, a few decades upon this earth, if we're lucky, and that be it. And I think then this movie kind of makes you go, you know, if you had been the one that died or you had been the one that's left behind, how would you feel? And, you know, that final kind of credit scene as you know, it kind of looks like it's almost over. You go, but it can't be over. There's something still so very wrong about it. And yet when we look to the scriptures and I look at what Christ has done, I go, there's something so incredibly beautiful and amazingly good about that. It's almost impossible not to believe, even though I believe in it wholeheartedly. It's to me, it's the complete difference between do you believe in a God or not? And how would you that kind of shape your world? That's what I see out of the film.
Yeah, that's powerful. That's true. You know what, Greg? I can't top that. It seems like a great place for us to start winding down. Let's do screen it or skip it.
Okay.
Infinity War, screen it or skip it?
Absolutely screen it. But again, I really think you want to re-see at least a couple of those movies, maybe Captain America First Avenger, the first Avengers movie, Thor Ragnarok. You want to see at least a couple of those movies going in. If this is going to be your first Marvel movie, you've done yourself a disservice.
That is the key thing to my review. I read one description online that referred to it as a season finale, and that's how it feels. If you want to tune in to, I don't know, whatever show you can think of, Grey's Anatomy or whatever, and you tune in on the season finale, you do not get the impact of what's taken place. It's sort of like, oh, there's a doctor and this bad thing happened to them. Okay, you know, or whatever is happening. And I feel that way about this film. If you are a fan of the Marvel Universe, then absolutely, you need to go see it on the biggest screen possible because it's the biggest movie you're ever going to see, unless arguably Infinity War Part 2 or whatever it is called. If you're new, take your wallet, open it up, grab your money, and go see A Quiet Place. because in all honesty, like, the film just won't make sense. I mean, you'll sort of understand what's going on, but it's just, it's like, you know, the passage that says a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal, if you have not love, that's how this will feel. And this is a celebration of Marvel for the fans. And I think if you're one of those people that's held out and you're not a big into the Marvel universe, then you can miss this because you'll miss it in the theater. You might as well.
Well, and again, it kind of ties in. You've had 10 years. if you've missed all the other ones, this seems like an odd choice to pick up now.
It's not like James Bond. You know, 25 films, and each one is pretty much its own thing. You can pick it up in the 13th one or the 24th.
Or, you know, it's also not Lost, where you can have watched the whole series or, like me, seen the first and literally the last episode and have pretty much the same understanding as someone who's seen all the episodes.
Oh, my gosh. We're not even going to have that conversation because I can't even talk to you right now. I can't even believe you just compared it to Lost on that level. But anyway, that's another story. Greg, I'm so glad that we had you on. Thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thanks so much for having me. It's always a blast to be here. And again, Steve, thanks so much for your great questions and your time.
It's always marvelous to have you.
I think we could keep doing this for infinity.
And beyond. And for all of you at home, a reminder that you can find all of our podcasts on anywhere, pretty much anywhere. iTunes, Google Play, Podomatic, Stitcher, Spotify, you can find us, Screenfish Radio. Also, if you look for us in any of those locations, you can find some of the interviews we've done, including Sean Gunn and Terry Notary, Rocket and Groot from Infinity War. You can look up the Infinity Warm-Up episodes with our team of teens as well, and lots of great stuff on there. If you go to the podcast page on screenfish.net, you can download Fishing for More, which can be questions that you discuss with the people that you see the film with as well. We will be back in 2 weeks, I guess. I think it's 2 weeks with Deadpool, another Marvel movie that isn't a Marvel movie, but is a Marvel movie. And we're excited about...
And has Josh Brolin in it.
Josh Brolin is making a lot of money this month. He's doing very, very well. I'm sure they're all part of the same cinematic universe. So there you go. So thanks again, Greg. I love having you on. I appreciate it. And to all of you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.